This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. It's rare indeed in the world of medicine to find a way to improve health and at the same time save money, which is why there's a growing focus in healthcare today on the idea that spending a little on social services now might be a way to head off spending a lot on medical care later. We've been unpacking that idea a little bit this week. So from our health desk at WHYY, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein wraps up our series with this. How the social interventions that make people healthier can seem so simple but can be so tough to pull off.
How do you treat people who are extraordinarily sick?
My name is Evelyn Powell. I'm 68 years old. I have emphysema. I got arrhythmic heart failure. Got asthma.
Powell runs a rooming house in Portland, Oregon. She's one of those patients that healthcare people call frequent flyers.
I was in and out of the hospital all the time. It would be a month, a whole month. I'd be in the hospital three or four times.
In that label, frequent flyers, you hear something pejorative. It's certainly easy to judge Powell. She struggled to keep track of her meds. She ate lousy food. And she kept smoking. Physician assistant Cassie Ryan-Mapolsky sees plenty of patients like Powell at her Portland clinic. Sooner or later, she says, you just get stuck.
There can be those moments where you're like, I don't know what else to do for you. Why are you here? What do you want? What do you want me to do? I have no way to help you. I have no way to help you help yourself.
In virtually every city and town in America, there are men and women who can't keep up with their chronic illnesses like diabetes and congestive heart failure. In virtually every city and town in America, there are doctors and nurses who believe poverty, mental illness, and addiction are at the root of the problem. These are among the most expensive patients in the healthcare system, and their ranks are growing. Under the Affordable Care Act, more people at the margins are getting insurance through Medicaid, says Harvard's Dr. Ashish Jha.
If you were homeless and had a lot of healthcare needs in the past, you often couldn't access healthcare, and that would mean you would get sicker and you would often die. Today, we have a lot more people coming into the healthcare system. Insurance expansion has meant that a lot of these people can thankfully get healthcare.
And that means the cost to taxpayers for prescriptions, ambulance rides, and week-long hospital stays just keep climbing. But unlike costs for people at the end of life for battling cancer, these costs, at least on paper, could be reduced or even avoided if people got better care. The consulting firm Oliver Wyman says delivering proper care to these patients nationwide could save $300 billion a year. The question, of course, is what proper care looks like.
We should get in the pool because I think lots of people are coming after school, so we should get in before it gets too crowded.
What's happening this afternoon at the Dishman Community Center in Portland may be part of the answer. Social worker Lisa Perlstein leads her patient client Tony Horst toward the pool. He's a little nervous. He hasn't been swimming in 15 years.
It might be hard on me. It might be not hard. I hope I don't have chest pains in the swimming pool.
Tony has a heart problem. He's got to lug around an oxygen tank. Tony also has a lot of anxiety. The fact that he showed up at all after getting lost on his way here is because of the relationship he's built with Perlstein. Tony is part of the Health Resilience Program run by Care Oregon, an insurance company covering Medicaid patients. Under the program, people like Perlstein seek out the whole picture of a person. She asks about their priorities, their worries, and their pain. That's crucial to developing the kind of trust that she's built with Tony.
This population of people have been impacted by so much hell. It's overwhelming sometimes.
It may be overwhelming and time-consuming, but Care Oregon believes getting to know patients so intimately helps it do a better job. For example, the company has realized not all poor patients with chronic illnesses are the same. Some are able to manage their disease and don't cycle in and out of the hospital. Those who do are often socially isolated, like Joanne McVeigh. She's married, but her husband's gone a lot, and she's really sick.
Diabetes, OCD, PTSD, panic and anxiety attacks, asthma, sleep apnea, plantar fasciitis.
Care Oregon's approach to isolation is to pair patients like Joanne with a social worker and a peer who has similar lived experiences. Joanne tells me about one day earlier this spring, stuck in her studio apartment at the Sandy Motel with her feet and knee driving her nuts.
I was really frustrated. and I was really in pain.
She couldn't make headway with the doctor, and she felt her anxiety spooling up inside.
I was emotionally feeling like I wanted to get to the hospital. I wanted to take pills. I was crying. It set my bipolar in. I wanted to throw things.
Joanne was this close to calling the ambulance, but instead started scrolling through her phone.
And I found Sam. She's got, you know, her stuff. I got my stuff. And it's just easy to talk to her. I can just be myself and explode.
Sam Osborne, Joanne's peer support, also diagnosed with bipolar disorder, came over and they talked. Catastrophe averted. No 911, no ambulance, no ER admission. Care Oregon knows it still needs better data, but building relationships and reaching the socially isolated seems to be paying off. 2.5 years since the program launched, the company says it's cut hospital and ER admissions by 35%. Part of that is people like frequent flyer Evelyn Powell want to avoid the hospital and the ER. Working with Care Oregon, Powell quit smoking, has a better handle on her meds, and has stayed out of the hospital since January. Stories like this lead many in the industry to believe improving health and saving money is possible and the only measure of success. But some, like Care Oregon's Lisa Perlstein, wonder if that's right.
We could do everything, and still people are going to struggle. It's just, poverty is so profound. Trauma is so profound.
Perlstein tells me about Bop, a 50-something woman, addicted to heroin for more than 30 years, in and out of an abusive relationship, in chronic pain.
I don't even know what was wrong with her physically. We had a standing appointment. She would show up on Monday morning at 9:30. I could see her get off the bus, and I would be able to tell if she was high or not.
Perlstein says while they worked together for a couple of years, Bop kept going into the hospital and the ER about the same as always. Bop stayed on the streets until Perlstein helped get her into hospice.
And she didn't die on the street. I'm going to get off. She died in her sister's home in a bed. With treatment, she wasn't in pain. She died with dignity. She didn't just fall down, face down in the street in the gutter and get picked up and taken to an emergency room where nobody knew her.
No one ever saved any money on Bop, but she died the way she wanted. Maybe that's enough. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Dan's story was produced for us with support from the California Endowment Health Journalism Fellowships. They are at USC Annenberg back in L.A.